Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
MSW Media.
How's it? It's Neil Everett from ESPN. You're listening to What We're Drinking.
This is best-selling author Joel Stein.
We've got BK Brian Kelly and Tyler Hubbard, also known as the duo Florida Georgia Line.
Well, I'm from Georgia and he's from Florida, but
we met in Tennessee.
We met in Nashville.
Well, we met on eHarmony.
Tiffany Thiessen, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's always good to see you. And
same.
To the man himself, Kenny Chesney.
Very exciting time in my life and something that has been a vision of mine for a while.
Hey, everybody. This is Ed Kowalczyk from the band Life, and you're listening right now to the second best voice from Pennsylvania. To come full circle like we have and be playing at the level that we're playing and having the fun that we're having, everybody's just like, pinch me.
Very, very, very thrilled to welcome Nathaniel Ratliff.
The Night Sweats idea was just kind of like me in my attic. I didn't even know it was ever going to be a record that anybody that saw the light of day.
So I'm here with Matthew McConaughey. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I said, could you throw a few stalks of sugar cane in there? He's like, hell no, I can't. I go, I know you can't, but...
My old pal, Adam Carolla. Ace, how are you?
You don't know why I've continued to do your shows, or you don't know why you love me.
I think you're just going to pull the and just go, you know what? I've had enough of this fucking shit. But maybe it's the alcohol. Must be that.
I don't have a very high threshold for like what I'll do and what I'll not do.
Hi, this is Kurt Russell. Listen, I escaped from New York, but I couldn't get the hell out of Dan Dunn's happy hour. Please send help.
Dita Von Teese.
I'm not trying to shock anybody. I'm trying to change people's minds about what it is to be a stripper.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Oh boy, exciting stuff happening here on What We're Drinking. First off, we are coming to you from one of the finest eateries in all the land. It's called Hatchet Hall. It's in, I think this is technically Culver City, but it's right in the on the border of Culver City, Mar Vista, and Venice. It is a, they've gotten a Michelin star here. It is a fantastic place. Always crowded. If you live in the Los Angeles area, I'm sure you've heard it. And if you don't, get your butt here and visit Hatchet Hall. And the last time we did a show here, I was joined by the very same human being that is sitting next to me now. She is, the greatest wine professional in America, maybe, my opinion.
It can
sure.
be argued.
We refer to her as the official wine goddess of the podcast. You know her, you love her, she's on SOM TV, Claire Copey.
Hi,
man.
Hi.
How are you?
Thanks for that intro.
Well, you know.
Wine goddess.
You've earned it. It's funny, I was talking about you last night because friends of mine moved to Studio City, and we were talking about all this great sushi there, and wasn't that where Sushi Note was?
Where Sushi Note, yeah, Sushi Note is in Sherman Oaks.
Sherman Oaks, yeah. Okay, so that's when you first came on my radar. I was following you on Instagram, and you would post a lot of great information about wine, and then you were, at that time, I think you were at Republique.
Possibly, yeah.
Which is another fantastic restaurant in L.A., and then you went over to Sushi Note, which is...
Note.
some of the best sushi I've ever had.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
And an incredible wine program.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was kind of their claim to fame, because there's a lot of beautiful sushi in Los Angeles and especially in the Valley. But that's kind of what it set it apart, was why would you not pair wine with sushi? It doesn't seem intuitive to a lot of people, but you would always pair wine with fish presented in another form, you know, in another style. So why not sushi and wine? And it works really well. There's more wine.
You're right, though. It is unusual. I don't know of any other places that I've been that had a sommelier, a sushi place.
At a sushi place? No. And I mean, then you get into, because sommeliers are also there for other beverages as well, beer, sake. So we had a really lovely sake program as well. They still do. And
come on,
now
don't be modest. You
once
left.
I left.
That place really went to shit
downhill.
Right after Claire left.
No, they opened a location in Beverly Hills.
Oh, really?
I think they're doing okay.
Okay. Well, you're at SOM TV full time.
Yes.
And you got some exciting stuff going on there, right? There's
a new
movie out. What's happening?
Yeah, so this is a movie that's been like 4 years in the making for us, long before I was a part of the company. They filmed in Armenia predominantly. And it was originally supposed to be a story about the origin of wine and religion and how that all ties together. And then it completely went off the rails. There was, of course, a war there, the previous war to the one that's going on now with Azerbaijan. And the producers that they're following there, the father and daughter team, winemaker team, for Kush Bubbles, as well as a couple other labels, had to harvest their grapes that were pretty close to the border with like bulletproof vests on. And then eventually the winemaker decides, I want to go into Iran where they cannot make wine anymore.
Because
you know, they have an Islamic regime there now for the past 50 or so years. And he went in and smuggled grapes, or attempts to smuggle grapes, out of Iran, and may or may not make the first Iranian wine in the past 50 years.
So let me ask this.
It's an incredible
story. I'm serious. What would it be about the grapes from Iran that would make it worth that risk? Because they would kill you, right, if they caught you doing it.
Well, I don't know I'm sure it's not a pleasant punishment. I don't know what the punishment would be.
I mean, don't they kill women for driving and stuff like that? You know, I mean,
something along those lines.
Wine, they might.
To be fair, this is an Armenian winemaker. They have a better relationship with Armenians than with a lot of other places in the world. But it's the culture. It's when you go into these areas, Armenia, Georgia, Iran, this is the cradle of wine. This is where wine comes from. It's got like, Armenia has a 6,000-year-old winemaking history. They discovered wineries that date around the same time as when we discovered the wheel, which is just mind-boggling that we've already figured out how to ferment things and get drunk for religious purposes. But
and it's interesting because I bet most people, if you ask them, would think that wine originated in Europe.
It did not.
I would have thought that back in the day. But no. Okay, so
it's lost culture, and it's exciting.
Which segue here now to a wine region that we're going to be focusing on today on the episode that does not have a long history.
No, it's the opposite.
Very new world wine region. We're talking about New Zealand, which, I mean, as recently as the 60s, right?
Later than that, actually. It
didn't really have much going on.
Until like the 1980s when Cloudy Bay released their Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, then it like really took off. But before that, it was really limited to mission vines, you know, which is a lot of the origins of New World wine regions. But before the 80s, really, not much.
And Sauvignon Blanc, as you mentioned, that put New Zealand on the map.
100%.
I remember back in the 90s, I think I was at Aspen Food and Wine, and New Zealand had a whole section. And it was the first time, I think, that they had it there at Aspen Food and Wine. And it was all the rage, like all the New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs. But that was the first I'd heard of it. You know, and
it
so
took off.
What kind of other grapes do they grow? Chardonnay, I know they do there.
Chardonnay's everywhere.
Pinot Noir.
They do some excellent Pinot Noir, especially on the South Island. You're seeing on the North Island some really great Syrahs, Merlots, Cabernet Sauvignon, Malbec as well. Really excellent whites on the South Island. Other than Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay, there's good Pinot Gris, Riesling coming out. So there's a lot of really cool stuff happening in New Zealand.
And we've got a selection from all over, but some of the bigger, Marlborough would probably be the biggest
that
region
the
for the wine.
That, not as far as like size, but it's as far as like what people know.
No.
People know New Zealand wines is pretty much Sauvignon Blanc.
And then you've got Hawke's Bay, Central Otago, and then obviously like in Auckland and places like that. Yeah, North Canterbury. Yeah. And we'll get into some of those. Yeah. But what is it if somebody knew nothing about wine? Mm-hmm. Let's pretend I know nothing about wine. I really don't know anything. What would be the elevator pitch on New Zealand wine?
Well, just that it is this exciting new wine region, that it isn't tied down in the same way that a lot of these other wine regions that are more familiar with us are. And by that, I mean, when you think about the wine that a lot of us drink, they're coming from a very small percentage of regions in the world. And a lot of them are going to be Europe, which are these old regions, which, you know, they have a long history of making these beautiful wines. But with that also comes a lot of rules, a lot of, you know, very specific directions when it comes to how much of a certain grape varietal can be in the wine, how it's aged, how long it's aged, all these things, where exactly it can be planted. And they have a lot more freedom in New Zealand to kind of play around and do what they want to do. And they're making incredible quality wines very quickly. And a lot of that has to do with where in the world it is. It's so far south. These are the southernmost vineyards in the world in New Zealand. And so with that comes a cooler climate, especially on the southern island. And that means that these grapes are going to have a nice slow ripening period. They're not going to get too high in sugar, which won't result in a super high alcohol wine. It's wines of incredible balance very easily.
Okay. And that's, you know, when I think New Zealand wines, that's what I do think, is it's a little bit lighter. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get those 14.5% alcohol wines, crisp. They tend to be crisp, vibrant, lively. Yeah. That's what I feel when I think about New Zealand. Yeah. So speaking of that, we're going to start right here with, this is a winery called Quartz Reef.
Yes.
I'm going to let you open it because you're the pro. And I'll tell you a little bit about Quartz Reef. It was founded in 1996, and the two partners there, or actually several partners there, Rudy, Trevor, and John. And they have about 30, how do you say that, hectares. And very sun-drenched area. What does it say on there? What region are we talking about?
So this is coming from Central Otago. So that's on the South Island in the southern part. Arguably some of the coolest sites in New Zealand. So you see a lot of very high-quality still Pinot Noir down here, and that also makes it great for these traditional method sparkling wines.
Okay. And just to let everybody know, when you say traditional method...
Mm-hmm. I mean, so this is a method of secondary fermentation, which means making the delicious bubbles in your wine. There's a few different ways of doing that. Traditional method is arguably the hardest and most expensive. It's also known as the champagne method. So all of the bubbles are made directly in this bottle. They put the still wine or the blend of still wines in here. They add in sugar and yeast. And sugar is food for the yeast, so it gobbles it all up, converts it into alcohol, and releases CO2, or bubbles. And so that's all happening in the bottle until the yeast dies. It kind of sits in the neck of the bottle, because the bottle's tilted, and it creates this wonderful texture in the wine that's unlike anything else. You can't get it in tank method, where the base wine is put in there and then just basically pressurized into having this effervescence. It creates all these lovely organic notes, like brioche, marzipan, pastry, and... Mm. It's so good.
I'm excited.
It's most complex.
Well, here, I'm going to give you this. And I'm also going to tell you, the winemaker at Quartz Reef, I don't know if you know it, his name is Rudy Bauer. He's a two-time recipient of the New Zealand Winemaker of the Year.
Fabulous.
He is biodynamic certification.
Nice.
Which, what does that mean?
So, I mean, biodynamics, they have to go, like, they have to follow this calendar. It's the biodynamic calendar, which tells them specific days. It goes along with astronomy, and it's more like fine-tuned into nature, basically, and they can only pick on certain days, water on certain days, and it's much more planet-friendly.
Okay.
For sure. We could get into this and do a whole episode on biodynamics, but it's for people who want wines that have a little more ethos when it comes to sustainability and the planet. Biodynamic is one of the good things to look for, I think.
So you can feel good about it while we're
drinking.
Well, here we go. I'm excited about this. Cheers.
I need to get to my wine.
This is a non-vintage, right?
Non-vintage, it looks like. Yeah, it's their Brut method traditionnel. So I'm not sure what the blend is in here. Here we are. So it's 76% Pinot Noir, 24% Chardonnay. So it's a very typical... Blanc de Noir style in champagne.
All right, I want to hear what you're getting on this. Now, Rudy, the winemaker, he's from Austria. And So I guess he's bringing some of that with him over to there.
He
trained in Austria and Germany, and then he went to New Zealand back in 1985. He was in Hawke's Bay. We're going to be trying some wines from that region as well at a vineyard called Mission Vineyard.
Oh, yeah.
And then he also came over here, worked in California and Oregon, where he got a love for Pinot Noir. And then he moved to Central Otago to make the first gold and trophy Pinot Noir at Ripon, R-I-P-P-O-N, Vineyard in 1991. Then he went. So he's been all over the place before he got here.
That's awesome.
And he's widely considered one of the premier winemakers in New Zealand. And this wine is delicious.
Isn't it so good?
Right?
This is good sparkling, especially with the holidays coming up. Mm-hmm. And people are looking for something different than champagne or other sparkling that they're familiar with and used to. Go to these other regions like this. Like, this is a killer.
$24
I was going to say, how much is it?
$24 Yeah.
Are you freaking kidding me?
No.
That's awesome. That's a great deal.
We know the rule is it can't be called champagne unless it's actually made in champagne, but I see a lot of it that is labeled champagne. Are they just
in regions other than champagne?
Well, you'll see sparkling wines, but I mean, are they just taking a shot?
Are they? Yeah, they are, because there is a legal.
The French are fairly litigious about that, too,
right? Oh,
yeah.
They just, the French just had, well, they had the Belgians destroy, what was it, like 2,000 cans of, what is it, Miller High Life? The champagne of beers? Is that what they just had it destroyed because they were so pissed that it's called the champagne of beers. They're so pissed.
And by the way, for those of you listening, I don't want to burst the bubble here, but Miller's really not the champagne of beers. There's better beer.
Yeah. And it's also just like, that's what you're going to go after? Like, I don't think anybody's taking a sip of Miller High Life and they're like, you know what this really reminds me of? Champagne.
All right. So as you said, 76% Pinot Noir, 24% Chardonnay. What is that?
Why?
Yeah, why? Why? Why do that?
Why do that? Well, it's already been found that these grapes do very well together. And again, they have this cooler climate that you could liken it. They don't have a similar soil types or blah, blah, blah. But it is a cooler region. In Champagne, they do blend a lot of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay together and some other grapes too. But this is like a proven, these things work together and these grapes grow so well in this region. Again, very cool. So you're getting wines of high acid. And you want that acidity in a traditional method sparkling wine. Like, this is just that backbone, that like electric razor edge acid that fills your mouth with water and wants to make you, like, wants you to go in for another sip.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about this. Sorry.
This is, like, I mean, this is really good. And again, like you said, for $24.
Insane.
You can't. So this is Quartz Reef. Everybody out there, it's available, I think, all over the United States.
Get it.
12.5% ABV.
Amazing.
Which is nice and light. Not going to do you in too hard. Yeah, this is fantastic. All right, so do you want to move on to the Sauvignon Blanc or the Chardonnay next?
Let's do the Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay, so that one is going to be Mount Beautiful.
So beautiful.
Mount Beautiful.
So beautiful.
You've been there? It's really, what's the word I'm looking for? It's beautiful.
Beautiful?
Founded by a guy named David Teese, a Kiwi. Family's been in New Zealand since the 1860s.
Okay. That's a good chunk of change.
It's been a long time. Been there.
A good chunk of change.
And he's come on, started this winery. We're going to do the Sauvignon Blanc, which we talked about earlier.
We did.
Is what they're most famous for in New Zealand, right?
Yes, but generally it's coming from the region of Marlborough, which is on the northern end of the South Island.
But this is North Canterbury.
This is North Canterbury, which is a little more central in the South Island. I did pour myself more.
So,
gosh, I'm so free. Hold on, let me give you another little splash here.
You deserve it.
You deserve it. You've had a time.
So is this 100? This is going to be 100% Sauvignon Blanc. This is a 2022. Just so we know, getting it out of the way right up top, it's going to cost you $18 for
Pretty
this
dang
bottle.
Good.
All right, so now let's give it a shot and see what we got here.
Now, from everything I understand about this producer, they're making Sauvignon Blanc slightly differently than the producers that a lot of people are very familiar with, you know, like the big mass producer, the Kim Crawford and the Oyster Bay, you know, these big ones that you see out there, in that they're adding some barrel fermentation and aging with this.
I was going to say, this is softer.
It's softer.
This is not that crisp New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc that I'm used to, but it's got a really... There's like a cut grass thing going on here. There's a little bit of tropical flavors happening in this.
But it's not quite as... Because you have that texture from the oak fermentation and aging, it softens it, like you said. It just gives it that kind of sexy little curve. as opposed to the other ones that are a lot of stainless, so it's very, like, primary notes hitting you in the face in a nice way. This is a little softer, a little more floral.
Yeah.
A lot of grapefruit on this, which you see a lot in New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
I feel like this with oysters or, like, a salad with, like, feta cheese in there would be a nice thing for this. Or, like, a light pasta, right? Like, a light pasta.
Your pairings are killing.
I'm really liking this a lot. Yeah, I mean, like, what are those? What are the oysters, the little ones?
The Kunimoto?
Kumamoto.
Oh, yeah. Those, because they got that little, like, melon taste.
And, again, $18, right? You know,
these are great. Yeah, it can't be stated enough. The quality of these wines, and then the price, the value coming out of New Zealand is just mind-boggling. I mean, there are some very expensive wines, but nothing compared to, say, like, you know, Burgundy or Bordeaux or some of these old world regions.
Why is that? Why are they able to price it lower?
A lot of it is demand. I mean, these old world areas are in high demand in the market, and they have a certain, you know, amount of clout, so they can do it. A lot of it has to do with the cost of land. If you're looking at Napa, you know, like half an acre of unplanted land, or a whole acre, I think, is like $500,000 or something like that. It's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Thinking big picture now, just beyond, what is happening? I've seen a couple of stories that have talked a little bit about, is wine consumption on the down?
Yeah.
What's going on?
I think it's just like this new generation just hasn't caught on to it quite yet, or it hasn't been marketed in the right way. I've seen a lot of regions like Bordeaux that are really trying to pivot and make the wines more approachable and less of you have to be a collector and very rich and you can only get, you know, these top very expensive wines and show that they have this range of approachability. But that's something I've been talking with wine professionals a lot, because it seems like it really is on a decline, and a lot of these regions are making too much wine and dumping it. There's just too much.
That would have been my guess, would have been wine sort of blew up, and it had this, and then, like they do, and like it's happened in the spirits world as well, you know, where you've got so many whiskeys, you've got so many, and some of them are struggling now because suddenly, and I want, did the pandemic have anything to do or with, like, sort of?
Probably. I mean, I guess I would have thought that we would have been drinking more based off of what I was doing during pandemic. I don't know about you.
Yeah,
I would have thought that the wine market would have been booming.
I remember, like, the first time I realized, you know, it was like a couple of weeks into the pandemic, and when it started to hit me that this was not something, you know, we all remember in the beginning when they said it was going to be 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
And then once it became very clear that it was going to be a lot longer than two weeks, I remember the first time I was like, you know, I'm going to have some wine at 11 a.m. And I had a little bit of guilt and I'm like, what am I doing? And then I thought, well, what the hell else am I going to do? You know, like I can't go anywhere. Can't do anything. I can't see anybody.
Nope.
And that's going to be the case for a long time. So why not?
That's what I did.
Mitigate the pain a little bit by drinking some wine. So this one, Mount Beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm digging this as well. And again, as Claire said, it's not the Sauvignon Blanc that I'm used to, that you might expect traditionally. And you said that's because it has a little bit of barrel.
The barrel usage.
And that just...
And also they're they're choosing very specific clones of grapes that that give off certain characteristics.
Yeah, I have all that here, but none of it makes any sense to me.
They're very specific on their clones.
There's
for the official
order. The I and the Q and the planted clones. All right, ready? Here we go. The planted clones are a mix of University of UC Davis, one, and the highly regarded, I wonder, you probably know what I'm talking about. I don't. I'm just reading this. The highly regarded Bordeaux clones, 316 and 317.
Sure.
Planted mainly on 3309 and 330. What the hell is going on?
This is serious.
Riparia Glure rootstock.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what I'm saying
right
now?
They've grafted the vine itself onto a different rootstock.
Why? What is that?
Because they want it to thrive in those specific conditions, and they are looking for a certain... all these studies have been done with, you know, Chardonnay clones, Pinot Noir clones. Some do better in certain climates. Some give off more acid. Some have more tannin. So they have all these little nuances in them. So they have to go to the, you know, the vine supermarket and go shopping and pick the vines that they want.
This is just so...
I will never
awesomely geeky. No, I think it's great. And then it says it's, you know, they're located on the southern side of the vineyard on slopes that have less topsoil, which make the vines work harder.
Yes,
and in case of making wine, making the wines work harder is a good thing.
Yes, you
it's
want
not
the
like
wines
the wine. The vines are like, I'm struggling, yeah. So screw you. I'm going to give you some shitty grapes. The more you make them struggle, the more they give you.
Yes, that's why you often see the better vineyards are planted on slopes because they have all that runoff and all of the nutrients then go to the valley floor where you plant like produce because okay. Those things need the nutrient rich soils. Grapes should not have nutrient rich soils, or you're going to have very flabby, overproduced wine, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
You don't want happy, healthy grapes. You want them to have a
what,
little
what
stress.
What year is this one again?
I think it was 22.
And that's, is that the black label, right?
It's the black label estate, the estate grapes.
I'm going to give you just a couple more quick things about this. Please. 2022 is a long, extended vintage, hot and dry early summer. Hmm. Sets that fruit up, right? Like when it's hot and dry in the early
parts.
Yeah,
you don't want to be too hot, though.
Again, summer salad with this, oysters, scallops, prawns.
This is great with salads.
All right, this is a good one.
Goat cheese. Sauvignon Blanc and goat cheese.
Really? That's the way to go? Like spread it on a little bit of cracker?
Yeah, like a little tart or something, you know, a little goat cheese tart with some chives.
Some people call me a little tart sometimes.
I'll bet they do, Dad. I'll bet they do.
The holidays are coming. That's right. Thanksgiving, right around the corner. Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, all right around the corner. What does that mean, by the way, right around the corner? You turn and you see it. What if you walk by? What if you keep going straight? Do you miss it? Do you miss the holidays? I don't know. I'm rambling. Anyway, holidays are here. If you're throwing a party and you're going to make some cocktails, if you use subpar mixers, you're going to get subpar drinks. And that's why I'm all about the Fresh Victor. Fresh Victor is a line of all natural, clean label cocktail mixers that brings the magic of master mixologists into your home. They feature a bunch of unique blends with contemporary flavors designed to suit any palate. All of the ingredients in Fresh Victor mixers are fair trade sourced. There's no artificial anything, and they're produced at a 100% solar powered juicing plant where there's no waste. Right now, Fresh Victor is offering a holiday special exclusively for you, listeners of the WWD podcast. Simply go to freshvictor.com and put a bunch of mixers in your shopping cart. And when you check out, enter promo code FVDAN20 to get 20% off your order. Again, that's FVDAN20. 20% off. It's the ultimate holiday gift to yourself and to your party guests. So what are you waiting for? Now's the time to treat yourself to the very best mixers on the market. And that's Fresh Victor.
When the only sound is the frozen silence of winter, you go to work, throwing mountains of snow back into the sky. And when the track becomes a railroad again, it's Miller time. Time to head for the best-tasting beer you can find, Miller High Life.
If you've got the time, we've got the beer.
Miller Beer.
Miller Beer.
All right, let's do...
Chardonnay.
What are we going to do now? We're going to do Chardonnay. This is Jules Taylor.
Jules Taylor.
Yeah, give me... Poke rinse me out here, will you? Thank you. Yeah. All right. It was started by Jules and George. That's the couple. And it's Marlboro, as you mentioned, is probably the best known. Would you say it's the best known region?
For the average wine consumer, what I would say, undoubtedly, when they think of New Zealand wines, they think Marlboro, Sauvignon Blanc.
So Jules is making the wine, and she was very influenced by Italian wines. You know, her philosophy is a lot to do with pairing with food, which what we're doing.
Good woman.
So this is 2001 that this winery came into being, and it was just like a little moon lighting project, 200 cases that they did.
Teeny.
And all right, let's try this.
That's nice.
Now, Chardonnay, I'm going to imagine before I've even tried it, this is not going to be like the Chardonnay I get here in California, right?
Depending on what Chardonnay you're talking about, yes. I think I know where you're going with this.
Like buttery, oaky, that you're not going to get that here. Okay, let me see here. And correct.
Correct.
Not.
It does have a little texture. I think it mentioned they use like 10% new oak. which gives a little
so
texture,
it's
a little butter and other stuff.
Not buttery. It's so Chardonnay in that region, if I'm not wrong, is sort of not considered, it's certainly not one of the first varietals you would think of.
No, number one will be Sauvignon Blanc. Just most of the vineyards in Marlborough are Sauvignon Blanc, but they have a lot of other great white varietals there as well, like Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, Riesling. So there is a decent amount of Chardonnay there.
Yeah, you just said 10% new oak,
10%
partial malolactic.
Yes.
This is I mean, it's a word that gets used a lot, but it kind of tastes like a little bit of an elegant wine to me.
It is elegant.
Do you think
so? It's got a little kind of butterscotchy note and texture.
Do you think it's priced elegantly?
What's the price?
$22.
I think that's priced nicely. I think that's a nice price for the Chardonnay. And this is a really great introduction to what New Zealand's capable of as far as Chardonnay goes. Although, you know, Chardonnay, it's a very blank slate of a grape. It really depends what the winemaker wants to do with it. They can slap on a ton of new oak, do full malolactic fermentation, and it's going to be really oaky and really buttery. And they can get really ripe grapes to make it like high alcohol and like, whoa. Or you can pick early and have a low alcohol wine with stainless steel, and it's like a razor. You get your Chablis.
Does it say what the alcohol is on this one?
This one is probably moderate. I would say like around like 13.5. Let's see.
Because the ones they're doing here in California are like, what, 35%? No, I'm kidding.
In Napa, like the 16%.
So it'll get you drunk!
Napa does make some very textural Chardonnay for the most part. Not everybody. Again, it varies. But no, this is a lovely one. It's a little creamy. This would be really nice with like a creamy pasta dish.
Yeah,
or
this
like
is...
like a fish in a butter sauce, like a delicate fish in a,
it's fruity.
Lobster with...
chicken noodle soup, maybe?
Hell yeah, why
a little
not?
Bit of chicken noodle soup
why
here.
Not?
A roast pumpkin, possibly.
Ooh, are we get
we're getting into that time. We're getting into that time of year.
We are. That's
true. With the Thanksgiving.
This is a great white wine for all of your holidays. Honestly, it's a people pleaser, and it'll change some people's mind about Chardonnay. You pour it for them, and they're like, "Oh, that's
how about
nice."
Brie cheese, like a baked brie cheese.
A Brie en Cru.
Ooh.
With like a little apple compote on the top.
So when you were doing that show on Somm TV, what was it called again? The competition.
Sparklers.
Yeah. You had to make food.
I did.
And pair. So when you were, it was a show, go check it out on Somm TV. You won.
It was fun.
You won.
Spoiler.
Well, it was a couple of years ago. It's like when people now are like, you'd be at the dinner or something. You're talking about Breaking Bad and you're starting to go, don't say anything.
People still say that.
Like, son of a bitch, it ended 10 years ago. Several years ago, Claire won this competition. I'm sorry if I'm ruining this prize, but go check it out. But I'm wondering when you take a sip, at least back then when you were doing that, are you immediately thinking food? Like, what can I do here?
Yeah.
Because you had to do that
to
win.
Well, in that mode, yeah. I mean, it was,
But is that sort of instinctive to you now? Like when you taste the wine, go, oh, I know what I would.
If it's a wine that really inspires me and that I think is incredibly delicious, you know, that kind of like makes me light up, then I'm like, what can I eat with this?
This
or I'll drink it by itself.
But. This one's great. I'm digging this as well. Chardonnay. It's you got a lot of citrus on there, a little red apple going on, a little bit of nougat, maybe a little vanilla.
A little vanilla, that's
on,
the,
on all that. And some nutty. You talked about that earlier, too, with the bubbly, but I'm getting the nuttiness in this wine here, too.
Oh, sure, like the little like marzipan-y creaminess.
Shit's crazy.
Moussey.
It's nutty.
It's a little moussey.
Okay, lovely. So now we've got... We knocked out three whites. We're going to go... You want to go Pinot Noir?
Let's go Pinot Noir, and then we'll get slightly more robust.
How about we do the Taylor's Pass Pinot Noir?
Okay.
Taylor's Pass is from Marlborough.
So we're still in the same area.
The northern bank of the Awatere River. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah. Which is like in the southern part of Marlborough, correct?
Yeah, and this is, let's get in here. I like to tell everybody what this stuff costs. Okay, this one's on one of the pricier ones that we're going to have. This is a $45, around that area, $45, $50 for this thing.
Can't say I'm surprised, but I'm
okay,
sure
and
bad.
That's the name. Just so we know, the name of the vineyard
is,
hold on,
not Taylor's Pass. Taylor's Pass
is Via Maria. That's it. Okay. And this is single vineyard. Taylor's Pass is the name of the site where they're getting this. Oh, there we go. Let me break
that.
And I'll break that. And I'll break that.
I got you.
Okay. all right. So this one, first off, very like ruby red color on this. This thing's, I'm ready.
See, this is one of those wines that makes me light up, and now I'm thinking what I want to eat with it. This is one of those.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's a 20.
It smells so good.
2021.
It smells so good.
Okay. Yes. All right. Single vineyard, the Taylor's Pass site. Right off the nose, I'm getting like blackberries and blueberries. Just berries happening here.
Definitely berries.
Baking spices.
Black. There's cherry. There's strawberry. There is baking spice for sure. That's great. Mushrooms. There's this kind of foresty floor thing. That's the wonderful thing about Pinot Noir. Like, a good Pinot Noir should have the fruit, but there also needs to be this kind of like earthy funkiness. Is it okay with the thumb? Okay. That's one of the things about a great Pinot Noir is, yeah, you have all the berry fruit, but then you also got to have like this kind of earthy, funky, kind of like sweaty, sexy thing going on. And there's like this like bacon. I don't know. There's just something like really sexy and earthy about it underneath all the fruit. And that's a Pinot Noir should have that.
This is really interesting.
Sexy.
All right. I'll tell you this, and I don't know if this is going to mean anything, but the vine, 63% clone 5. Does that mean anything to you?
None There's so many Pinot Noir clones. I wish that I like could memorize them. I wish I was more studious, but I know a couple.
So you get the Pacific Ocean here. You're going to get the southerly breezes that come up.
Oh, yeah.
This is 100% Pinot Noir, 13.5% alcohol, pH 3.65. What does that mean to you, Claire?
That's acidity.
That's the...
It means it's going to be a little higher in acid. Mm. The lower the pH, the higher your finished acidity will be.
Mix of destemmed and whole clusters.
Oh, cool.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So that means they're going to be... So some of the grapes, when they're destemmed, that means you're picking the berries off the stems, as you would imagine. And then whole cluster, you're pressing the berries with the skin, with the stems. So it's giving it a little bit more tannic structure. So tannin's the part that kind of like dries your mouth out and gives you the sandpaper gums, if you will. But it also gives it these really cool kind of green cracked pepper components as well. These rotundin components is what we call them.
I like that the fruit isn't like
jammy.
It's more subtle. I wonder what the maturation has to do with that. It was 14 months in 30% new French oak, and then 9 months to settle in the tank.
Yeah.
How does that influence the taste of the wine?
So with the new French oak, French oak has slightly different qualities than the new American oak. So with new French oak, you're going to get baking spices, maybe a little vanilla, predominantly baking spices though. When you introduce new American oak, then you're getting things like coconut, dill, bananas sometimes as well. So with the French oak, it just adds, it's a little more subtle.
Okay.
Sometimes. Again, depends on the winemaker. But Pinot Noir itself is like a very finicky grape. You need somebody who really knows what they're doing to make a good Pinot Noir. And then new oak is expensive, so that also plays into cost.
Okay. The food pairing with this is going to be like meat.
Meat, but nothing like too heavy or powerful.
Lamb, duck, maybe?
New Zealand's famous for their lamb, for sure. Duck, absolutely. Great with grilled poultry. Great with mushroom dishes. Mm. Like a mushroom risotto in this, with maybe a little shaved black truffle on top.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
So yeah, it's really good. The tannins on this, not too. It's kind of
soft. It's there, but it's not like
polished.
Very polished.
How about that?
Good call. I like it.
And this harmony in this wine, I think. And there's also a very velvety. I'm getting that very velvety mouthfeel to this one.
Lovely.
This is a delicious wine.
Medium bodied.
And again, we're talking Via Maria,
good
rhymes.
Stuff.
Taylor's Pass Pinot Noir, and what year? What is it?
21, right?
Marlborough, New Zealand, $45 bucks a bottle. Get it.
Makes sense.
All right.
It's worth the price.
Man, I'm digging this. All right, now we're going to go on to the, I'm going to mess up the name of this, Tewanga?
Yes.
Tewanga?
Tewanga.
Tewanga. Wild Song is the name of the expression of this wine. Am I saying the right there? This is a Syrah,
yes.
And all of these, by the way, are none of the, excuse me, none of the wines that we've had are cork. It's all screw cap.
Yeah.
And which is kind of common for New Zealand, right?
Yeah, a lot of new, like New Zealand, you'll see some in Australia too, and then South Africa, you'll see a lot of
the New World wines.
Kind of, yeah.
And is that, obviously, you're eliminating corked wines.
You're eliminating the possibility.
But why would the Old World wines
not do that?
Why wouldn't they do it?
Tradition.
Snobbery?
Mostly. A little bit.
Possibly.
Yeah, you could say snobbery and tradition. There are a lot of people, they just like their corks. They like their corks. They like that it's an organic thing and that it can kind of shift and that it does give their wine a little bit of oxygen when it's laying down in bottle, because your cork does shrink a little bit and release a little oxygen. So they like that organic interaction with their wine, and some of those wine need that little extra kick of oxygen while they're slowly aging in bottle.
Okay.
Yeah. So this keeps it like really tight. Sometimes screw cap wines need more time to open up.
Yeah. I'm this one. So this is from the Hawke's Bay region.
Yeah.
The next wine we're going to have is also from Hawke's. Can you tell us a little bit about Hawke's Bay? Or?
So now we're on the North Island, and we're kind of on the northern end of it, on the eastern side. It's a bay, Hawke's Bay, as you'd imagine. And this is a site, it's kind of one of the warmest sites in New Zealand. And so you have grapes here that are doing well, grapes like Rhone varietals like Syrah that do fantastic here. Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon are great here as well. We're going to be drinking a Malbec from here. So these grapes that need a little bit more sun to ripen and fully realize a delicious wine like this. The Syrahs are, I'm excited.
And this is a 2021. The price on this is $25.
Pretty good.
A bottle. And now we're going to go taste it. Oh, and one other thing before we even get into tasting notes, they're stressing here that this is a vegan wine.
Sure.
What does that mean? I mean, we know what vegan means, but what does it mean when it comes to wine?
So with wine, they go through a lot of them that aren't natural wines. They go through a process called fining and filtering. And so that's when they're taking out all the little particulate that's in the wine. And a lot of wineries will use things like egg whites or fish bladder. And I can't stress enough that these things are removed before the wine is bottled. So they naturally attract all that particulate and pull them out. And because of that, those wines are then not vegan.
Would it be funny if they left it in by accident? You're at a restaurant, you took a sip, and you just spit out this big blob of stuff, and you go, what was that? Oh, it's like fish bladder. Damn it. Whoops.
My bad.
Whoops. They left it in there.
I always wonder, though, like, because a lot of these, like, some of these vegan wines are machine harvested, and unlike a person who's hand-picking wines and can see, like, the little critters in the vineyards, machines don't see that. So, like, a lot of animals die in the process of machine-harvested wine. So,
yeah.
Can they say they're vegan? I don't know.
I guess they can say whatever they want. 13% alcohol on this. It does say it contains sulfites, though.
Yes. So it's Every wine contains sulfites.
If you're vegan, fine. But if you're sulfite-averse, better stay away. All right. I'm going right off the note, right off the top. I got a little cinnamon.
That would be
Is that unusual?
No.
Is that part of the Syrah?
No, that's oak. You're getting cinnamon clove. But Syrah is going to have really nice, also kind of some meaty notes, pepper, sometimes smoked meat, especially when you're getting into like Northern Rhone Syrahs. But this has it as well. Because they're on the more restrained side of Syrah as well.
This is
it's nice.
More intense than the Pinot Noir. I think it's a little bit heavier.
It's more robust, for sure.
And that's just the grape varietal, right?
That's the grape varietal. Pinot Noir is a thin Pinot Noir is a thin-skinned grape. It tends to make lighter-bodied, more elegant wines, if you will. But Syrah, it's not a heavy wine. Some winemakers make Syrah into very heavy wines where it's a lot of jammy fruit, high alcohol again, but you can make it into something that's really restrained and elegant as well. But it's going to be a little more robust than a Pinot Noir.
So what would you eat with this?
So this is a great like barbecue wine. So this is a steak wine for me as well. Like we're starting to get into steak territory. I think this would be lovely with like a charcuterie board, like a slightly spicy kind of meat. Still great with duck though and lamb. Excellent with that. Stews.
Yeah.
This is a great fall wine.
What I really appreciate a lot about my experience, at least with New Zealand wines, is I haven't had anything from New Zealand, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but where you get surprised and not pleasantly so with New Zealand. I think there's consistency with New Zealand wines where they pick their lane and they know what they're doing and they do that.
And that's a hard thing to do for a new wine region when you have all of these things at your disposal. You can plant any of these grapes and have to kind of figure out what works best. And they figured it out in a very short amount of time and are just making better quality wines each vintage.
And again, by that, I don't mean that they're not being, because as Claire mentioned earlier, they get to play around a little bit more.
Absolutely.
They have less rules and regulations on what they can do. But I think once they go, oh, this is our thing, this is what we're good at, we're going to keep doing it. And another
example.
And
that gives them room to play more too, because once you find your backbone and stuff that will bring in, you know, revenue, then you can start doing the little fringe experiments and start getting fun and funky too.
Yeah.
You know, so
am I saying it right though, Claire? Te Awanga? It's T E A W A N G A.
That's what I believe.
Is that what you'd say?
Yes.
We're probably botching it. It's probably. Completely dead. Wild Mary. Song. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are.
Wild
for sure.
Song. Wild song. Which, do you know what that means in, what's the language in New Zealand?
Maori? I don't know.
Do you know what wild song means?
No.
It's like when you're singing and it's crazy.
Is it really?
Yeah, that's
it's
what
your
it means.
Like it's your little heart song,
I'm
your crazy
that up.
Heart
I'm
song.
Making that up.
That's terrible. I bought that. I'm so grateful.
And again, I think, oh, here they come. Oh no.
It's LA.
They knew we're here. So again, $25, Te Awanga Wild Song Syrah. Is there a year on this one? I don't even know.
You're close. Where is it?
Hold on. We'll let the trucks go by. Okay.
2020.
Going to go on to...
our last wine.
Yeah, I know. We've blown through this today. What's going
on?
We
tend to blow through our wines.
Moving way too fast. All right. This one's a special. They're all special, but this one is special for me because, as I mentioned to Claire off the air, the winery is called Decibel. And Decibel is made by a good friend of mine named Dan Brennan.
Dan Brennan.
As you can probably tell, or if you listen to the show, you know I'm from Philadelphia. And Dan Brennan grew up across the Delaware River in a little place called New Jersey.
New Jersey.
That's right. He's a Jersey boy.
Oh, no.
And Dan's family owns an old bar in Philadelphia. And Dan, you don't see a lot of Jersey boys making wine
That's
in New Zealand.
One.
So Dan went over there many years ago. He wanted to learn how to make wine, and he saw some sort of an apprenticeship program, and he went over there with the intention of learning to make wine in New Zealand.
With no experience in the
States.
No
experience,
whatsoever.
Yeah, no experience. Just the That's only impressive. Experience he had was growing up in a family that owns bars,
sure.
So he was familiar with adult beverages. But yeah, as far as I remember, Dan never trained at all here. He went over there. That was his first exposure.
That's impressive.
And not only did he fall in love with winemaking, he fell in love with New Zealand, and he never left. And he stayed over there, and he's still there. And this last time we talked, he told me he's got no plans to ever come back.
I wouldn't either. Have you seen that place?
And yeah, it's
so beautiful.
Decibel is his winery, and Dan has now established himself as one of the premier winemakers over there as well, which is incredible.
Oh, yeah, Dan.
This is the Hawke's Bay Malbec at 2021, $32 a bottle. Let's talk a little bit about Malbec.
Oh, let's. So Malbec is it's got a cool story. It's originally from southwestern France, and then moved up to Bordeaux. And before the late 1800s, it was one of the most planted grapes in Bordeaux. Then after a root louse called phylloxera came along and kind of wiped out all the vineyards, once they eventually recovered and replanted, they're like, Malbec's kind of finicky. It's not super profitable for us, so they planted very little. So it's used sparingly in blends in Bordeaux still. Very small amounts. Usually you'll see 2-6% Malbec blended in.
Some sort of emergency happening here.
It's Grand Theft Auto.
There we go.
So then they had discovered in Argentina that Malbec was planted there. They thought it was another grape, and I can't remember what it was at this point. Oh, they thought it was a different grape. What was it? But it turned out that that this grape was Malbec, and it hadn't been planted very well. They hadn't been putting much effort into growing it specifically for what that grape needed. And then a winemaker called Paul Hobbs, American winemaker, might have heard
yes,
of him.
Heard
he
Paul
came
Hobbs.
Along and helped out in training the vines a little bit higher off the ground and using oak, which really helps with Malbec. And it just took off, Argentinian Malbec, frick.
Yeah.
Took off.
You say frick?
Frick. I'm trying to be more ladylike.
I got it. And here I am dropping F-bombs all over the place. I apologize.
No, I'm surprised I said
You're
it
from
myself.
Chicago. Come on.
I know. Who am I?
If you go home and say frick in Chicago,
I don't.
They're kick you right out. They'll be like, get out of here.
Oh, gosh.
When you go to Bears games, it's you're like, come on, you frickin' Bears.
Yeah, frickin' idiot.
Come on, Bears. Yeah, frickin' Bears.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
So Malbec. All right.
Malbec.
Yeah.
Yeah, it tends to produce wines that have deep pigment, this deep purple pigment.
I was just going to say the color on this is just deep purple,
this
right?
This is going to turn your teeth black, people.
Yeah. And when I'm smelling it, it's just, you got plum going on, right?
And deep black and blue fruits.
Wow.
Blueberry.
Okay. Delicious. Dan's been making this Malbec Or you say Malbec. Malbec?
Malbec.
Malbec. I say Malbec.
Whatever you want.
Since 2009. Yeah. Black cherry. A lot of fruit there. This is
good
fruit
tannic structure, though.
And spicy, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Like black pepper. It's got, I don't know what oak usage he's using, but it has baking spices. Again, a little vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice Malbec.
This is the most tannic wine, I think, had, without a doubt.
For sure.
Okay, I'll give you some winemaking notes here. Fruit had a five-day cold soak before natural fermentation kicked in. 25 days on skins. Tell us, what's that mean?
That's how long the juice sits with a cap of skin. So, you know, they crush the grapes, juices run off, but the skins are still there. Skins give the wine pigment.
Okay.
All grape juice is clear. The only reason this wine is red is because it sat on the skins for 25 days.
Wow.
Fun.
People didn't know that.
No, you can make a white
Malbec
if you want.
People are saying
that.
Yeah. Neutral French oak.
Yeah. So it's not putting a ton of, like, oak is like seasoning, you know? If you put too much salt on something, you ruin it.
21 months in the barrel. Mm-hmm. And this came out in March of 23. So recently. Yes.
Which is crazy. So you also have to remember they're on the other side of the globe from us. Mm-hmm. So they harvest at completely different times. We tend to harvest, you know, depending on the year, August through
earlier, isn't it? Because of
this year was late as shit.
Was it really?
People weren't harvesting until, like, they were harvesting their white grapes in, like, September, like, end of September, which isn't, like, some people just brought in their last fruit a couple weeks ago.
Good, though, right? Because
depends. I mean, and then the year before, there was a huge heat spike in September, and they'd pull in all their fruit like crazy people, like, really fast, you know?
When I wrote American Wino, or when I went on the trip that would yield the book American Wino, was 2014, and I left in the beginning of September, and I'm like, this is perfect. I'm going to be hitting all the wineries right when they're doing, and I got up to Napa, and they were already picked.
Yeah.
And this is in the beginning of September.
It depends on the year. This year, I was up there around that time, and nothing. They were waiting still.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Food on this? Any thoughts on what
now,
you might want
to... New Zealand's known for their lamb. This is your lamb wine.
Why are they known for the lamb? Because they have a lot of
sheep. They have a lot of sheep. They had a lot of sheep. That's what they were known for a long time.
One time I went to, I've been to Scotland a bunch of times, but on one of my trips to Scotland, I went, there's an island, just a very remote island where they herd sheep. And we were on a 105-foot brigantine boat, you know, an old tall ship. And we were sailing up to Skye, the Isle of Skye, where Talisker is. But we hit a really bad storm on the way. Like, I'm talking 30-foot swells, right?
Holy shit.
And we had to divert to this island. It's called Canna. And we went to Canna, and we had to dock there. We had to get off the ocean. And we had to get out of the open sea because we might die. And and wait out the storm. And I found out that Canna is just an island where they strictly herd sheep. There was like one guy there that ran the island, basically. And who lives here?
He's like, me.
And he said, basically, there's like 20 sheep herders. They come in from the mainland, and they do like 3-4 week shifts where they live out there.
Oh, that's
but he,
cool.
Here's how he said it. He said, 20 guys and thousands of very skittish sheep. And it took me a second to figure out what he meant.
Oh, no. Oh, no. He was messing with you, though. He was fucking with you, for sure.
I hope so.
I really hope so. For the sake of those sheep.
I really hope so, for the poor sheep's sake.
Poor sheep.
All right.
They're hard to catch, though, weren't they?
I loved all of these.
Did you have a favorite?
Well, I would say Decibel because it's my friend's wine. No.
That's no.
I don't know. I really don't.
It's
I
tough.
Really think we had a nice mix because did we repeat any varietal? We didn't.
No.
No.
No, no.
So,
unless you consider like the Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
We had a Sauvignon Blanc, a Chardonnay, a Malbec, a Pinot Noir, and a Syrah.
This is a wonderful slice of what New Zealand is capable of. And every single one of them
and
is
what's crazy is I didn't
wine.
Even plan it. Like that.
You didn't?
It just sort of happened.
That's lovely.
Oddly enough.
The universe provides.
Every once in a while I do things that seem like they're well thought out, but almost always so little thought goes into what I do.
I understand that.
That's why I have you on.
Yep.
Because you're a thinker.
Oh, no.
And I'm good at asking you what you think.
I think these are great wines.
I think these are all good, and I will post these on at the Imbiber is my Instagram. I'll put some stuff. We'll have some video up there of Claire and I. And again, tell us more about the movie that's out now.
Yeah, follow Somm TV Streaming and Somm Films, and the film Somm Cup of Salvation is out in theaters all over the country, soon to be the world. And we're really excited. We have a week-long run in New York City at the Angelica Theater starting December 8th and running through the 14th. So if you're in New York, you absolutely need to keep your eyes peeled for these tickets, because there are going to be Q&As with the director, other cast members. Maybe. Mm. Maybe. But there will be amazing like dinner events, wine tastings with the wines in the film, including maybe the Iranian wine.
The Iranian wine?
Maybe. But you can buy the Iranian wine online right now if you want to taste something completely unique and incredible that you will never taste again.
Do you know the name of the wine?
So the grape is called Russia, and it's an Iranian indigenous grape. And the
Russia?
Russia.
R-A-S-H-E-A. It's called Russia?
R-A-S-H-E-A.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds like Russia, but it's Russia.
I feel like you're messing with me right now. You're it's picking Russia. All the regions where shit's going on.
I know,
you're
like, right?
They're Iranian Russia. And Russia. But and,
it's
a
beautiful wine. It's called Molana, and it's...
Do you ever think about doing your own wine? You must think about
it. I do, but then, like, I have so many... I have friends that are making wine, and they all say, don't fucking do it. Don't freaking do it.
Don't freaking do it, yeah.
Because it's I mean, it's got to be the most rewarding thing in the world, right? To have this land, if you do happen to have your own vineyards, that you're working and making all these decisions, and then you make a beautiful wine like this. How beautiful is that to work with the land and produce this? But I think I would lose my mind, because... I like to be in control of things. And you can't
You
with
would
wine.
Be in control of them.
No, because there's nature.
Well,
I can't control nature.
I mean, you can certainly take steps to at least tame it a little bit.
I need to make a few more million.
Yeah,
more
or move million, out sure. of here. I mean, yeah, yeah, I mean, buying anything, any vineyard space in the West Coast of
That's
the United States
happen.
Is not going to happen.
It's
but,
never going to happen.
You know, they do make wine in every state in the United States.
They do. I just had Utah wine for the first time.
How was that?
It was okay. There were a couple that were okay. I'm not going to lie to you. There were a couple that I was actually very surprised by.
What part of Utah are they making?
Southwestern is the best place. Yeah. Like close to Zion.
Well, you know when I did wino. Yeah. I mean, I went Louisiana, South Carolina.
There's some places that are making cool wine. You should always check it out.
In 14, when I did it, I will say beyond California, Oregon, and Washington, mm-hmm. which I would say are that's sort of the crown jewels of American winemaking.
Yeah.
And then on the East Coast, you know, you've got New York State. But the places that really surprised me the most were Virginia.
Yeah, those are getting good.
Pennsylvania had some decent wines. I had New Mexico was really, and Texas was the big one that really got me. That I thought, they're doing it there.
I'm surprised they were that good.
Arizona, too.
Arizona's good. Michigan is apparently, I haven't tasted any recently.
Well, I went to the Paw Paw region of Michigan, and I had some decent wines. And then I went up and had some of the Upper Peninsula.
The Ubers?
The, what do you call them?
Ice wine.
Ice wines.
Yeah.
One of these days, Claire, why don't we do an episode where we just get wines from America, but from regions you just would not expect.
The unsung heroes.
Kansas, Missouri. Yeah. I had a decent wine from Nebraska. It was called Mileta Vista.
Oh, so now we're getting into like hybrid
clones. It was in the middle of Nebraska. They were very religious people.
Sure.
And they had had a fire at the winery maybe a year or two before I got there, right? And they had rebuilt it, and it looked great. I said, wow, incredible that you were able to build this back up again. And she said, Loretta said, well, it was a lot of hard work and determination. And of course, you know, God is always watching over us.
Yeah.
And I said, well, maybe not always.
He kind of created the fire.
he was
taking a nap.
I was kidding, and he laughed.
And she did not.
She didn't laugh.
She did not laugh.
She was immediately identified me as the heathen that I am. And again, let me stress, very nice people, really great wines. And I am a complete asshole when it comes to stuff like that. And I'll just say that off the bat. But who's not an asshole? She's a frickin'
great segue
wine expert, and we love her. Claire Copey, where can they find you on the social medias?
So, medias. For me personally, it's at @Claire_Copey. And then SomTV streaming is at @SomTV_streaming. And yeah, check out Cup of Salvation. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. Like, absolutely incredible. I was moved to tears.
And will people be able to stream it?
Eventually, yeah. It will be on SomTV streaming. Yes. Okay. For now, it's in theaters.
And is the what's the annual subscription of SomTV still around $50? Or?
Yeah, it's we've severely underpriced it because we're nice people, unfortunately. But it's $49.99 for an entire year, or you can do $5.99 a month.
I'm a subscriber.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've been.
There's a lot of good stuff on there.
But ever since you got on there.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, I got you back. Well, I'm hoping that Claire will be back possibly before this year is out, because we were discussing earlier that we might try to do a bubbly. We'll squeeze a bubbly episode in for the holidays. And I'm just going to tell you right up, straight up. Today, you got a lot of knowledge. Claire laid a lot of specific details, and we did... When we do that bubbly episode, we're just going to get fricked up on that one.
It'll get you drunk.
Yay. And that's what we'll do. Can we just do an episode where we just plow through bubbly?
Can I not talk about the different fermentation methods?
No, none of that shit. We're just going to be like, what do you think? Just pop it.
God.
Just pop it. And we'll have some food and we'll, okay. Yeah. Because you know what? The only thing better than listening to drunk people ramble on is listening to drunken ramble on while they're chewing into the microphone.
Totally.
Yes.
It's like drunkenly stuffing fries into our mouths.
And on that note, I want to thank our friends here at Hatchet Hall for hosting us. Please, I cannot stress to you enough, Louis Ryan, the owner, and his team here, Duncan and the chefs and everybody else that are here, they do a fantastic job. If you ever get a chance, you got to come to Hatchet Hall. I want to thank them for having us. Of course, I want to thank all of you out there listening. You have so many options, the podcast. Well, you could be listening to the Smartless. You could be listening to Joe Rogan. Call me daddy. Call her daddy. Call her daddy? Let's call her daddy. That's the one. That's a huge podcast. You could be listening to, and you know what? You should listen to those. But you should also listen to us. And you are listening to us, and I thank you, and I love you for that. And that's it. We're out. Bye.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.